This is CliffCentral.com.
I love this. This is the apogee. This is the time when rap was at its very, very best. I'm not saying there isn't great rap since then, and there hasn't been, but man, this is the glory, the halcyon days of rap. Mm. I think at this point, who was still, Notorious B.I.G. was already dead, but Tupac was still alive.
What year was it?
It was B.S.
Before
Sia.
Late 90s?
99?
Yeah, well then, I don't know, B.I.G. Biggie might have still been alive. Anyway, they were all there. Snoop, Dre, Notorious B.I.G., Tupac, you know... It was just such talent. My God. All right, anyway, let's move on. We've got things to do, people to see, places to go, and Mabali has stories for you.
Yes, I do.
Right.
So there are a lot of conversations that have been happening in Zimbabwe, one of them being whether or not to abolish the death penalty in the country.
Ooh.
At the end of 2017, the world watched with keen interest as President Robert Mugabe was deposed after just a short stint of 37 years in rule, and then he was replaced by Emmerson Mnangagwa. Now, the change of power is also significant for those interested in Zimbabwe's death penalty policy because Mugabe, around the time of his departure from office, had planned to resume executions, to the point where advertisements were taken out to recruit a hangman because that position has been vacant since 2005, and Mugabe was pro-death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
But then Mnangagwa came in. He, on the other hand, has been vocal in the opposition of the death penalty. Significantly, he himself had faced the prospect of being hanged under the government of Ian Smith, against which he fought during the Liberation War. And then within 4 months of assuming office, Mnangagwa commuted to life imprisonment the death sentences of prisoners who had been on death row for more than 10 years. So this conversation back on the table for discussion in Zimbabwe.
You know, when I was very much younger and dumber and didn't know a lot and just started studying law, and before we actually learnt anything in law school, I was one of those people who said, oh, the death penalty must come back. And you still meet people from time to time who say, you've got to get the death penalty back, and we've got to be putting people down like animals. And I didn't take me long to get out of that mindset. It's just, think about it this way. The death penalty means giving the state the right to decide who to kill. And that shouldn't happen in any civilized situation. Because who's the state? No one should kill anybody.
Yeah, which one individual has the power to decide that?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Not everybody is wholesome. You know, there are child molesters and there are rapists and there are horrible people in the world. Awful, awful people. But if we decide to kill them, we're as bad as they are. In Zimbabwe, someone like Robert Mugabe, who was recruiting a hangman just before he was deposed himself, I mean, if he knew anything about what was coming, he would have said no more death penalty, would have repealed it immediately because it could have ended up being him.
Mm.
You know, this is how quickly your fortunes change under a government. And are you going to let those kind of people who are political, who are elected in a popularity contest, and let them decide who to kill and who not to kill? That seems like very arbitrary and capricious and random behavior. It's probably not a good idea. I don't think anywhere where they still execute people. You know, in Saudi Arabia, they have hangings and beheadings 12 o'clock every Friday. And people in Riyadh can go and
just
stand around
still
and watch.
Go and watch.
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask. Like, would you need to buy tickets or do you just roll in?
Do they charge for that?
No, they shouldn't. You just roll in.
It's also interesting to observe how quickly people move from, you know, having objective conversations to having subjective and heavily emotive conversations. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people who change their opinions about the death penalty the second they are directly impacted by crime, and in some of the most horrific ways in some instances.
Sure.
And I'm sure there are a lot of people who, you know, very quickly say, oh yeah, I'm for the death penalty now, especially after what happened in the year 2004 when my loved one was ABCD.
Yeah.
The whole thing is... It's difficult, man.
Well, that's also why you don't ask people in the heat of the moment for an opinion on everyone else, because they'll say, I'll kill them all! You know?
Yeah, but that's how humans function.
But it's like the
you
revenge
swing from
penalty.
One extreme to the next, depending on a situation.
We can't make laws emotionally.
It's revenge as opposed to, like, societal maintenance. Like, get the dangerous people off the streets, see if you can rehabilitate them, you know, like, working with society. Mm. This is, like, institutionalized revenge.
Mm.
Yeah, look, I have never really been a proponent of the death penalty, but I do strongly believe that in the instances where people have been convicted of obvious heinous crimes, you do deserve to lose some of your rights. You no longer get to have the same access to the rights that who behaves in society.
Yeah. But I guess one of the big things here is that they say, well, if the death penalty is the deterrent to criminals to be heinous. But is it, though?
No, because people continue to be heinous.
Exactly. So if they can't prove that, then yeah.
And when you start doing stuff of a certain level of heinousness, it's either because your background and your circumstances have become so violent and heinous themselves that you probably don't give that much of a shit if you die, or because you've lost the ability to give a fuck to the extent where you don't give a shit if you die.
Guys, it's also so final. You've heard these stories about people who've been found guilty of something and then, like, 10 years later they discover...
DNA or whatever.
Yeah, they find that that person was never involved in a crime. And you think, wow, this is so final. You're going to kill someone? I mean, look, don't get me wrong. We're not talking about, you know, the stopped in civilized conversation 1,000 years ago. It only stopped, like, a couple of... Maybe even 100, maybe less than 100 years ago. Because as soon as the Enlightenment came around, people stopped it. Before then, public executions were a big crowd puller, bigger than sports matches.
It used to be sport, like
it
back
was
in Rome.
Sport, yeah. But I'm talking about France 200 years ago, where you would go to watch executions like we would go to the bar on a Friday night.
And the crowd would act like the Kendrick Lamar crowd. Yes. The Oak would be like, but I really didn't do it. And they'd be like, bullshit. We want to see you get executed. Never seen you before, but you're guilty.
But also, what about the therapy for all the people who are tasked with being the executioner?
Oh, that must
be horrible. Even in modern times where people die by lethal injection, isn't there someone who still needs to press a button?
Mm-hmm. A bunch of people with lethal injection, a whole team of people all press a button at the same time,
you see?
And only one of them releases the chemical and they never know who it was.
Really?
Oh,
true story.
But still, like, those guys go home every day and then they get home and then what's going through their mind?
That's
killed another one today.
Societally useful psychopaths. We talked about it earlier. If you've got psychopathy that can be put to use of society, you're like, yeah, give me permission to kill people, I will. Don't and I won't. Cool.
Wow.
Someone says here, just to correct us, never mind the death penalty, guys, how about castration for the plague of rapists in South Africa? That's Gary. Well, I know Mubs would be in favor of that.
Yeah.
Now, I don't see a problem with that, because as sore as it is in the short term, you know, it doesn't have long-term negative effects for society, and certainly for the person who's a rapist, it might actually calm them down. Or else maybe it's considered a kind of torture. I'm not sure.
But there's a huge argument that in a lot of cases, like, sexual abuse is entirely psychological, and but then if you remove somebody's virility, potency, whatever,
genitalia,
they're going to be even more frustrated and hateful, and then you can sexually harm a lot without having
an
erection.
I'm just tired
of
civilities to people who prove that they no longer deserve them. You go around raping children, I'm sorry, but I don't give a fuck what happens to you after the fact.
I agree with you completely. I just don't necessarily know if it helps. That particular thing helps.
No, it is an interesting discussion. And this one came in, just to correct you, Gareth, Tupac died in 1996 and Biggie died in 97. Dr. Dre released in 2000, still Dre, and the Chronic 2001 album, You Sound Like an Idiot. That's what someone's telling me. And you sound like a millennial idiot, in fact.
True.
What did you say?
No, I just said that hearing that song, it's like those were the glory days of rap, if you ask me. Mm. So forgive me about the chronology here. I'm talking about new music, not remixes like the ones at Bad Boy. Tupac died a year before Biggie. But Tupac's music lived longer than both Biggie and Pac. I'm sure you must have made a mistake there. I think you mean maybe that Dre's music lived longer. I don't know. Anyway, lots of comments coming in. I shouldn't have got into this rap this rap tornado.
East
now.
Versus West. Proofread
your tuning.
I think
when
from
you're
now
tuning
on,
someone, proofread it.
I think from now on, only Heavy G really has any authority when it comes
right.
to rap.
And DJ Ben K to a certain.
Oh yeah.
Well, for yeah, in mid-tempo house music.
Sorry, this is the same guy who
not
maintains.
Not quite a big genre, but I mean, I'll own it.
The same guy who maintains Will Smith yeah, was behind Tupac's death.
Adult contemporary house.
I will now listen to
house music. I right. actually will vouch for GC's hip hop creds. I've been to one or two parties, especially back in the day that Gareth used to rock. We did a Plet Rage once where I could talk for years, but he played bangers. He had underground bangers.
We just did rap. I think for the whole set. I didn't even play any other music.
And good stuff too.
All right. Anyway, we'll move on. Yeah. All right. 14 minutes after 7. What else is going on?
Well, listen, I know that every now and again, maybe you get annoyed by your colleague, but how much do you hate your colleagues?
Oh, my God.
Please don't tell me someone has, like, killed their colleague.
Well, almost, yeah.
Like a stapler or something.
There is a German man who is being accused of poisoning his colleagues' lunches.
Oh, okay.
Whoa.
Multiple colleagues.
Yes. Investigations into a man accused of poisoning the packed lunches of some of his colleagues is now being forced, or rather is now being focused on two possible poisoning cases. This is according to German police. He is a 56-year-old man. He has been in custody since last week.
56.
Yeah, after he was charged with the attempted murder of one of his colleagues.
I can imagine the Americans like, we're going to ban packed lunches in response to this threat. You can still have your automatic rifles, but no more packed lunches on account of some deaths.
The colleague informed management after he noticed a suspicious powder on one of his sandwiches back in May. And police say that on Tuesday that the focus of their investigation was on two cases of illness and that they have not ruled out further cases. No indication was given of the symptoms. I mean, how much do you hate your colleagues is the question.
Wow.
I wonder if it was like a specific colleague hated for a reason or just general hatred of everyone.
Well, according to this story, there are at least two cases and they're also not ruling out the possibility of even further cases. And it all links back to this 56-year-old.
I would like to know what the intention was. Was it ultimately death? Was he planning and wanting to kill his colleagues?
He is facing a charge of attempted murder.
Yeah, you see, that's a bit extreme. If I'm pissed off with a colleague, I'd just put a laxative in their coffee. You know, that's fine.
That's fine.
And it's funny.
That's fine. Yeah, that's
killing
totally
someone,
fine.
That's a bit extreme.
See, this is why I said at the start of the show, you don't test well. A laxative in the coffee. I mean, you out yourself.
There's logic in what I do. I'll be, you know, it'll be 5 o'clock. It'll be time for me to leave the office. I'm getting into my car. But
leave at 5.
But somehow Mikey happens to scrape along your car. You see? That's you don't have to kill colleagues. You just have to be smart.
Now, according to one of the German publications, one of the employees has been in a coma with mercury poisoning.
Oh, mercury poisoning.
Mercury.
Yeah. Yep.
Take that, laxative.
And the local Westfalenblatt newspaper reported that the second victim is receiving dialysis. So, no, we're not just talking a laxative in the coffee here. We're talking people almost dying.
That's heavy going. Eh?
Yeah.
You really have to hate someone to do all that.
Or hate everyone.
But Abby, also, how do you think you can get a... How do you ever wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to get away with this? They're not going to figure out it was me. You know they're going to catch you at some point, you idiot.
Mercury.
Mercury poisoning is very serious.
Although you might actually... You never know how many people have done stuff like that and gotten away with it. Like... People be like, wow, there's been a high incidence of people getting really sick and dying in this company over the last 10 years, more so than the average. And there's just some dude who spent his whole life, like, killing two colleagues a year forever. I mean, you don't know who's doing it if they don't get caught, right?
That high-functioning psychopath you're talking about.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, jeez. Mercury actually messes you up.
Mercury will make you mad.
Yeah, like it
will make you mad.
Works with your nervous system. So, it gives you psychotic reactions, hallucinations, and could lead to suicidal tendencies.
Which is a great band.
I have half a kilogram of mercury at home.
It's in liquid form.
Because one day it's going to come in handy, huh?
It's a liquid metal.
Sandwich, yeah.
No, you would use mercury. I mean, listen, for example, some of it you make by taking mercury salts and you put a piece of copper wire in it, and the mercury actually forms on the copper wire. Copper wire goes into solution and the mercury drops out. And then you have, I mean, it's a fascinating metal. It's heavy. So it's almost as heavy as lead. It's liquid.
At room temperature.
At room temperature.
It looks cool as hell.
It looks amazing, but when we were kids, we used to play with it in our hands.
It's also naturally in a lot of food. Like, the anti-vaxxers are like, oh, there's mercury in the vaccine.
There's huge amounts of mercury in salmon.
There's also mercury in apples. You need a certain amount before it starts to become harmful, and that amount is not very high, but below that amount, it occurs naturally in a lot of things. That's where the expression Mad Hatter comes from. Way back in the day, I want to say 1800s
or 1700s,
people's hats used to be lined with mercury before they knew that mercury was bad for you. Cool hats.
They actually used mercuric nitrate, salt, and what it would
get in your head.
Correct, and it would make people mad.
And they started noticing that eccentric, slightly crazy people generally tended to wear hats. So it's like your crazy uncle who was a bit loopy, who wore a hat all the time, was a Mad Hatter. And then they realized, oh shit, the hats are actually making people mad. It's not just a coincidence that nutters tend to like hats.
Whoa.
And in fact, it was more the people who made the hats than the people who wore them, because
a hatter, a hat maker.
In using that salt, what it does is it fixes the position of the fabric that you're making the hat out of, so it retains its shape, basically. So that's where it all comes from.
It's like a little metal band on the inside of the hat. Yeah.
Correct. But mercury, I mean, it's a fascinating metal, but it is very toxic. And in a laboratory, for example, you're meant to separate your mercuric waste from all the other wastes. So if you have, you know, other metal salts, and there are other metals that are dangerous, and other sort of, you know, acidic compounds that are dangerous, but mercury waste has to be kept separately and disposed of separately and in very, very different ways.
So if I'm planning on poisoning Gorge, how do I handle the mercury in the process of poisoning him? Do I wear protective...
Yeah, you would wear gloves, maybe even two layers of gloves, so that you don't get it on your hands. You would be careful not to breathe in the vapor, because mercury vapor is very dangerous. That's if you're dealing with the metal. And if you're dealing with the salts, you would be careful, obviously, not to ingest, inhale, avoid skin contact, all of that stuff.
Then how did no one notice this dude putting this around his colleague's food?
But you said it would have been done at his home, I'm assuming. You said he was using a white powder, right?
One of the people who got sick complained of his lunch being tainted with a powder of sorts.
All right, so that was probably a salt then. So those you would make by, you know, converting one salt from another, doing a double displacement or whatever, but you'd have this white salt. It would be like table salt, except quite a lot heavier. And you'd put that in the food, and enough of that would...
Table salt is sodium chloride, so is mercury salt mercury chloride?
It could be mercury chloride, mercury nitrate, mercury sulfate, any of those. But get it on your food, and it's going to have, as C.S. said when he was telling us about the different things that can happen to you, it can have a profound effect on your sanity.
It'll Science has drive you mad. With Gareth Cliff.
Thanks for the jingle.
Hey, this is what I love. This is what this stuff. If I could, I would talk about this all goddamn day, and you guys get so bored. So let's move on.
I was really pissed off.
All right. Well, let's talk about money, right? Let's talk about big money and the music streaming service. Because just when you thought that record companies had been rendered completely redundant, in comes Sony Corporation, who revealed yesterday that they are going to be parting with about $2.3 billion to gain control of EMI, becoming the world's biggest music publisher in an industry that has found new life in streaming services.
Wow. You know, not so long ago, Sony was a new player on the music management, distribution, record company parking lot. It was this new shiny player, and they didn't have a lot of assets. They didn't have a lot of artists signed to them. Now look at them. They've bought up just about everyone. There used to be a company called BMG, which Sony bought to get into music. And then it went from Sony BMG to Sony. And Sony Music is now this powerful... Well, I mean, comparatively, if you took Sony Music now and you compared it to what EMI was in the heydays, it's small.
The streaming people need to just fulfill the role of signing new artists. They need to hire A&R people and then do exactly what the music companies do. Go, cool, well, we'll give you a deal. Then you, like, either exclusive to our streaming platform or, and we'll market you, et cetera, et cetera. Make sure your lyrics are crap enough to do well on YouTube or license you to the other streaming people at a premium.
I think Jay-Z does that through Tidal, actually.
Yeah.
And
they all have different means of getting it done.
And I'm trying to think now how many different music streaming services we have. So there's Spotify, there's Apple Music, there's Google.
Google Play is one I use, yeah.
Yeah, Google Play. And then just the other day, Google's YouTube announced that they are now going to, and I think it's in an attempt to replace Google Play, but through YouTube, they're now going to be revamping their entire music stream. So these are the big players now of today. And it's all thanks to the new Sony CEO, Kenichiro Yoshida. Who is on a mission to make revenue streams more stable after his predecessor engineered a major turnaround that shifted the firm's focus away from low-margin consumer electronics to the entertainment content and image sensors. So this acquisition gives Sony a catalog of more than 2 million songs, and it is the biggest so far by this new CEO. $2.3 billion US dollars that they're going to give to EMI.
God, I would love to be an EMI right now, not Sony. Yeah. Take that payout, because in the record business right now, that's like a lifesaver. Just get out, cash out now, guys. Get away from the music business. It is so hard to make money there now.
EMI currently commands 15% of the music publishing industry. So, an extra $2 billion injection.
Yo.
Who knows what more they're going to do with that?
They own 50% and 15.15. I was going to say, but even still, 15% being worth $2 billion is indicative that things are not.
No.
If 15% of the entire music industry is worth $2 billion, I mean, some artists back in the record sales days probably got close to the billions. I mean, in relative terms, hundreds of millions of dollars from people made the money 25 years ago.
Absolutely.
That's one, like the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, whatever.
Listen to this quickly. I've got a list of the best-selling musicians of all time by U.S. album sales.
Okay.
Best-selling musicians of all time. Are you ready?
Sure.
So, let's start off with Garth Brooks sold 148 million albums.
He's number one.
No.
We're starting at the bottom.
The Beatles. No, it's just a random list, so you're going to have to put it together yourself. The Beatles sold 178 million albums. All right, Elvis Presley sold 136 million albums. Led Zeppelin sold 111.5 million albums. Can you imagine? The Eagles, 101 million albums. Billy Joel, 82.5 million albums. Michael Jackson, 81 million albums. Elton John, 77 million albums. Pink Floyd, 75 million albums. AC/DC, 72 million albums. George Strait, who most of us have never heard of because he's a country singer, 69 million albums. Barbara Streisand, 68.5 million albums. The Rolling Stones, 66.5 million albums. Aerosmith, 66.5. Bruce Springsteen, 65.5 million albums. Madonna, 64.5 million albums.
George Strait is killing all of them. Yeah.
The Beatles are right at the top then. Madonna, Mariah Carey, 64 million albums. Metallica, 63 million albums.
Yeah.
Whitney Houston, 57 million. Van Halen, 56.5. I mean, this is amazing. U2, 52 million. Van Halen beats U2.
Glad that Metallica beat U2 as well. It makes me feel
good in my heart. Celine Dion, do you think Celine Dion beat or was beaten by Metallica?
I'm going to guess she beat them because of Titanic.
No. Metallica sold more albums than Celine.
Then there's hope
million.
For the universe.
Yeah. Fleetwood Mac, 49.5. Neil Diamond, 49.5. Journey, 48 million.
That's incredible. Journey had one song.
That's incredible.
No, they actually have lots. But, yeah. I mean, I know, like, they're one of those bands where you hear their song and you go, I know the song, I just don't know who it's by. Are there any big rappers on there?
Let me just see here. Eminem. 44.5 million albums.
Jeez.
Bob Seger, Alabama. Kenny Rogers. Shania Twain. Kenny G. I mean, it's Kenny G. Can you believe he's on that bloody list?
Yeah.
48 million albums.
My favorite of the Alphabet Kennys.
Kenny G. Well, he and Heavy G are they're related. Santana's on there. Taylor Swift is on with 41 million albums.
Not surprising. She's massive.
Reba McEntire. Chicago.
No, but I guarantee you Taylor Swift's 41 million albums did not bring in the kind of cash for the artist.
No,
that
course.
Eminem's 40-something million albums did.
And
he was the last mega sales artist of the CD era.
And can you imagine the Beatles? I mean, this is why Paul McCartney's worth over $1 billion. It's just unbelievable the kind of time and money that was put in there. And remember, in those days, to have made the kind of sales that you made, you could charge for the units. It's just unreal.
I mean, let's assume you get a dollar for every album that's sold. I mean, I would hope that the artists get more. But let's assume you get $1 from every album sold and you're selling 50 million albums.
Well, the Beatles, 178 million albums sold.
Even, yeah, and they're definitely making more than a dollar.
And remember, they were finished in 1970. They put their shoes away in 1970 and did solo stuff or whatever else.
Which also didn't do badly.
No. So
even Thomas the Tank Engine made some serious loot.
and that's Ringo Starr. Yeah. Right, okay. So there we go. There's some interesting stuff around music.
And now how times have changed. I mean, can you imagine buying a CD today? Mm. It's such a different...
You would never.
And you different spoke about era. Aerosmith being in the 60 millions, and I watched Joe Rogan's interview with Steven Tyler, who's a bit nuts but seems quite lovable, and he talked about in the 90s having gone through loads of drugs in the 80s and bad management decisions and dodgy record deals and having been completely flat broke by the time the 90s started. And then he had the thing about don't want to fall asleep or close my eyes. They went into a phase of having professional songwriters write their music and had a resurgence. But the bulk of those sales would have happened in the 70s, the 80s, during their golden years, and he emerged from that with no money.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Yeah.
He's all right now. But
timing is everything, right?
And, you know, don't let dodgy managers make decisions for you while you're high for 20 years.
Well, we're going to be speaking to a guy called Jason Strong just now. He's a South African music producer and songwriter. He actually lives in LA. He's been playing acoustic guitar since he was 13 years old. He's born in Poch, of all places. And he's been performing with his band in L.A. They've also won Best Contemporary Instrumentalist. He was in the Grahamstown Jazz Festival. He was at St. John's College as a scholarship student. And the interesting thing about this guy, he's produced tracks for artists that signed up to major labels like Universal, Capitol Records. Some of his work has made it onto Spotify's viral charts all over the world. He's got a growing catalog. He has amassed over 12 million global streams. See, that's how we measure things now.
A homie from Poch.
That's it.
Nice.
One of the singles he co-produced has been streamed over 3.5 million times on Spotify. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So there we go. Furthermore, he's also crossed into television. His composition was selected to score the highly anticipated Fox TV show Phenoms that will premiere in late May of this year. He's got a whole bunch of songs that are written, recorded, and produced that are scheduled for release through Sony, we just spoke about, Universal, and Warner later this year.
Jeez.
Yeah. So we'll speak to him in a second. He's a very, very interesting dude. Anything else you want to throw in, Mubs?
I don't know. Are we talking to this guy now or what?
Let's speak to him. What the hell? Let's get to the important stuff. Hey, Jason.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can. Loud and clear. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Awesome. We were just going through some of the incredible stuff that you've been doing and all the stuff that we're anticipating this year. Sounds to me like you've landed the dream job and you've finally found the place where your talent is appreciated and you can make money.
Most definitely, man. On my way, still a lot to accomplish for sure, but definitely on my way there. So very privileged to be here. And yeah, it's been great so far.
You know, I get people asking me because they think I'm in the music business because I'm in media. They ask me how can I get into music and what can I do, and some of them are talented and some of them aren't, and I always say to them, find a different job, make sandwiches or something, because it's so horrible and so difficult. No, it really is. It's awful in the music business right now to find your niche and to break through all the noise, right?
Yeah, it definitely is difficult. I think the internet has made a big difference in that. Platforms like Spotify, at least in America, have made it accessible for anyone to kind of put music online, which is definitely easier nowadays. You can kind of do stuff on your own to a certain extent. But definitely the industry is still pretty cutthroat. A lot of jealousy, a lot of competition, you know. And no one really, you know, it's not fun and games, but definitely worth the reward. You know, I get to do my passion every single day, and I couldn't be more grateful.
I'm curious, like, when you talk to people about what you're doing, do they mostly write you off because they go, well, I'm talking about people from Poch, where you grew up. If you tell them that you're busy producing music and you're scoring major TV shows and that kind of thing, do they even understand, or do they just dismiss you as being some guy who moved to America to try and make it?
That's actually a very interesting question. Like, some people do definitely give a bit of a vibe that's like, he went to America, he's left, he's not true to South Africa. Whereas other people kind of see me going to America as an accomplishment in itself and are very supportive. And yeah, I'd say most of the people don't really know exactly what it entails. It is a completely different universe. And even today, when I speak to some friends that aren't in the music industry, it's just crazy to me to think that, you know, people are going to the office every day and sitting behind a desk and writing papers and stuff, which is cool too. But it's just a complete different reality. And I think it's kind of disconnected from so many people's version of reality that they don't really have a grasp on it. But definitely, I'd say most of the reactions that I've got is positivity and support from the people that I know in South Africa.
That's fantastic. I'm curious also, you went to Berkeley, which is, I mean, that's the place to study music in the world. What kind of people were you there with? I mean, were you there with some interesting people whose names we might know? Because it must have been fascinating to have learned, your craft.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually was at school. I kind of got there when Charlie Puth was finishing up.
Oh, yeah?
So he was there. So I was there, and he's doing great stuff. Now, Meghan Trainor was there for a second, too. And then there's some of the professors that are there are amazing too. Cara Diagardi was a professor there who I got to study under, and she was a judge on American Idol and has written, huge hits for everyone from Britney Spears to Katy Perry. The faculty there is also just insane. But I only graduated last May, so it takes a bit of time, but definitely the people that I'm graduating with will be on the map soon. I have some friends and a bunch of people that are writing some big stuff right now that you'll hear of soon. Including myself, actually. So it's exciting, and it's definitely a great opportunity to have gone to a place where some of the best people in the world are able to go through, you know?
I also think it's really interesting that you're doing the stuff that isn't necessarily the glamorous frontman stuff. It's composing, it's songwriting, exactly. It's production, it's engineering. These are the skills that actually will end up making you much more money these days than being the artist. The artist gets such a small cut out of these things. You guys, the producers and the engineers and the people who actually put the songs together are the ones who end up with the lion's share of, first of all, the money, and second of all, you kind of have an immortality in what you create, because it's a real skill. It takes a lot of technical knowledge. It takes a huge amount of musical flair and creativity and talent.
Right.
And sometimes the artist is all talent and they don't have any technical skills. And sometimes, of course, they have a nice combination of both, but the magic happens in the studio.
Absolutely, yeah. What's great about my side of the music industry is that I'm not limited by public perception, you know, and I don't necessarily want to be limited by public perception. A lot of artists have a certain amount of time that they have in order to do what they want to do before they're too old to be considered attractive or appealing to the masses.
Right.
So for me, in that sense, it's great and rewarding because I know that I can have a career of 50 years ahead of me, you know, in order to do whatever I'd like to do. And actually, it's good in the sense, I feel like things have changed for the better, that artists are getting a little bit more of the share nowadays. At least from my experience, I can say that the competition here is so tight. As a result of what I was saying about Spotify and the accessibility of getting music online, that now you kind of, artists have to be writers too, to a certain extent, or they at least have to be involved in the writing. And since mostly artists that are able to do some of their own writing are the ones that are getting the bigger deals, they also happen to get a cut of the writing as well, which is obviously a big part of the royalty. So things are better in that sense, but definitely from my part, it's good because I would oftentimes be able to own the master recording, which is one half of the income stream.
Mm-hmm.
I think the model is definitely improving. And like websites like Spotify, Tidal, Apple Music are actually doing good things, I'd say, and will be getting even better in the future. But from my part, I'm definitely enjoying the behind the scenes. I'm definitely not trying to be on stage. In my high school times, I was trying to be John Mayer, you know, I was trying to be the next John Mayer, guitarist, songwriter, singer. But I kind of just learned that I like the big picture stuff a little more. I'm very comfortable in the position right now.
Who would you really like to collaborate with? Who would you really like to work with?
It's a tough one. I love Frank Ocean. I feel like he would be a challenge for me as well. He would stretch my musical abilities. I think he's a genius. In terms of producers, I would love to work with Max Martin, who is probably not very known because he's very off of like public social media and
but
stuff.
This is the guy who's written pretty much every hit song in the last 20 years.
He's literally my hero, and I've been studying his work for years and years, so definitely would love to get in with him sometime. Other than that, there's this artist, Banks, that I'm also really obsessed with. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's like a solo act. Yeah, I'd love to work with her as well. I think her music's super cool and at the edge of like cool, fresh stuff, you know.
Is the temptation into the Jewel really strong there? No, I'm serious. It's a serious question. Like, you hear about like the glamorous lifestyle and kind of like the superficiality of it, and so many artists get sucked down that path of making bad decisions. I mean, is it more a case of those artists putting themselves in the path of that, or is there a real kind of suction into the evil Jewel?
I definitely think with great power comes great responsibility, right? And like these guys have so much on their plates, and it becomes overwhelming at times. You know, I'm in sessions with artists quite often that just can't handle the amount of attention they're getting and the criticism that they're getting from every end, you know? And oftentimes I feel like sometimes they resort to the wrong things in order to get through that.
Yeah.
But for me personally, it definitely isn't a problem. In fact, over here, it's not a temptation, it's more of a job, the whole Jewel. So everything here is about social circles. Los Angeles is very, like you said, in many senses, superficial. There's a lot of kind of climbing social ranks to get into the right circles, to get into the right kind of record labels and publishing companies and work with the right people. So when I go out, it's oftentimes more of like a networking event than it is a Jewel. And even though I do want to have a Jewel and, you know, drink and have fun, it's like, what is going to be judged? What is the guy that was at that place that's important going to say to the rest of his team the next day? You know what I mean? And I think generally the industry is pretty chill. In that sense, it's not very stuck up. You know, you can send emails to people like with what's up, you know, like it's not like very,
You're not dealing with corporate, you know, investment bankers.
You know what I mean? It's not like a corporate world. So that's nice about it. But definitely a lot of, you know, you got to present yourself in a way that's good. So
you
want to
be professional. Did you hear this news this morning? I mean, my buddy was just telling us about how Sony is just buying the last sort of remnants of EMI up, which is going to make them the biggest record company in the world. Do record companies still factor largely in what you guys do, or are they becoming ever smaller and less important?
I think that a lot of artists like Chance the Rapper, you know, are advertising this whole independent model, which is not entirely true, because I think we do rely heavily on major labels, mostly for distribution. Anyone can put their stuff on SoundCloud, and if it's good, generally good music rises to the top as long as there's a bit of a push from the artist that's independent to send to blogs or to get some kind of buzz going around it. You know, get it on YouTube videos, type thing. But the major label is still very important in terms of distribution. They have the relationships, they have the money as well. The biggest thing is the money. You know, you just got to pay to get your stuff on all the radio stations, and it's all just about network and connections, and they have the connections. So I would say that my goal is mostly to work with people that are signed to major labels. If I'm working with people that aren't signed to major labels, it's in order to get them signed to major labels, and that's just because my work will be more accessible through their distribution, you know?
You talked about how the good stuff will, on public platforms, the good stuff will rise to the top, but can you explain mumble rap, and how can we stop it? What can we do to together?
That's a real tough one. Mumble rap, I don't know. You know, hip hop is huge in the United States right now. So hip hop, if you look at the charts, sorry, my phone is going off here.
Yeah.
If you look at the charts, literally the top 20 charts are probably like 80% of them right now are hip-hop songs. So there's definitely been like a rise in hip-hop. I can't explain the mumble rap. I mean, I've thought about it myself too, and I've kind of gotten to the point where it's more beneficial for me to just do, you know, I get to make music every day, so for me to do something, if initially I wasn't mad about it, it's still not the end of the world. I still get to make music. So I would like go ahead and definitely learn how to do that. But I still can't explain.
Are you subtly admitting that you've been involved in making some mumble rap? Is that what you're telling us?
I've got a guilty conscience. Did you help with Gucci Gang?
I have a slight guilty conscience. I mean, I'm not heavy in there. The hip hop scene here is very different. You know what I mean? It's a very specific scene. You know, you're either kind of in it totally or not really in it. I've dabbed around there, you know, so it's not, I definitely wouldn't say I'm like making mumble rap every time, but I'm listening to hip hop and I'm saying, how can I make what's accessible to the rest of the world apply to my songs?
Being a great producer, you have to be able to figure out what people want, right? And you have to figure out what the fresh sound of today is and be able to incorporate that into other people's work.
Absolutely, yeah. For me, the one thing, I grew up in South Africa. I actually went through, when I was like 15 in high school, I went through a stage where I was like heavy into metal, you know, like listening to metal all the time.
Bless you, friend.
And I was like, everything else sucks. I don't want to listen. But I've kind of learned over the years that I just have to be, and I think it's good for as many people as possible to be kind of open-minded and take things. Obviously, your preferences have a say.
Yeah.
But for my profession especially, like, I have to be open-minded. I have to, you know, this is more than just fun. You know, it's also my job. So I have to look at the charts. I know exactly what you mean.
I call it musical maturation. What ends up happening is that the genre matters less than anything. And it's, you know, a good song when you hear it, wherever it comes from, right?
Exactly. The song is always king, regardless of the production, you know?
Out of curiosity, which were your favorite metal bands?
Oh, man, there were so many. I loved Underoath. I loved Killswitch. This is like, we're getting into
it. You and me can be friends. Deceptive. Yeah.
What's that?
You're talking Gordon.
I got a crush on you now.
Gordon's getting all doe-eyed.
I'm going to download your whole catalog when I get home just now.
Hey, you like metal too, man?
Did you catch Underoath in South Africa when they came out?
I didn't, man. Are they still playing together?
Yeah, they actually just reformed and released some new music.
By the way, for anybody who's just joined us, there is a metal conversation going on that none of the rest of us understand.
Right. They came here about 8 years ago. It was a real, real jewel. But anyway, moving along.
Jason, congratulations on what you've achieved so far. Keep on flying the flag high and produce some amazing stuff and blow everybody away, please. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Gareth. I really appreciate that, man.
No worries. Great to talk to you. Thank you. Jason Strong. He's a South African music producer and songwriter. He's living in LA, and he's doing some cool stuff.
What a cool guy.
Yeah. Well, especially since he started...
I was finding him cool even before he became super cool.
All right. Okay. Whatever.
He participates in mumble rap, Gord. Yes. You leaf in the wind.
Yeah. I'm fickle when you just can easily be won over with metal conversation.
Guys, somebody sent me an email this morning. I get a lot of feedback from our listeners. First of all, I just want to refer to some things that came up yesterday. Ben's cold shower idea getting a lot of interest. First of all, Madi Merke says, good morning, guys. Wanted to say, Bra Ben has a point regarding cold showers. It's a bad idea throughout, but it feels amazing afterwards. That's Muddy Merch.
Yep, had my sixth one in a row yesterday. Well, yeah. I've actually kind of lost count. It's normal now for me.
Well, that's what Ben does. You know about reality.
You got to psych yourself up a little bit. But I just find that I'm not cold afterwards. This is the interesting thing for me.
I've always got this idea that you might be poikilothermic, Ben, and if we cool you down too much, you'll stop moving.
Like a lizard.
Yes.
Someone else with a totally different point of view. I tried Ben's cold shower this morning. Couldn't manage more than 20 seconds. Agree with Mubs. I'll try it in summer. Lynn.
It's all about the breathing, Lynn.
All right.
Focus on the breathing. The breathing will set you free.
All right. And then someone sent me a video of Sia's reaction to not being invited to the royal wedding. You want to hear how that goes?
Sure.
Sure. All right. Here it is. So this is Thea's reaction to not being invited to the royal wedding.
What am I saying? I'm going to London. You only have to be invited to go to the royal wedding. You just can't go. Because you want to. You have to be invited.
It's this little girl, and she's very...
Yes, I got an invitation. And you said, no, you're not going.
But you didn't get an invitation, love.
If you can figure out your way through the Scottish accent. But eventually she has a temper tantrum. And that's exactly what Sia had before he figured out that he wasn't.
Shame,
he wasn't on Meghan Markle's list.
Hey, look, I don't really feel bad because there was only one member of her family there. So, I mean, oh well.
Yeah, that's true. One member of her family, huh?
It was only her mother.
Yeah.
The rest of her, some of her family did fly over to England. Of course, they were barred from the wedding.
Oh, really? They flew over hoping to be admitted some at the last
did.
Minute?
Some did, including her trashy cousin. Doesn't this family just get better? Her trashy cousin who went into a club with a knife.
Oh, my God. She really has the best family.
Just to ruin her name.
Wendell says you guys should look up the Wim Hof method, Ben, cold showers.
That, yep.
Breathing exercises, cold exposure. It's got hordes of benefits, supercharging your blood with oxygen and increasing alkalines in your blood. Loads and loads of benefits. Cheers, Wendell. Take you say it. It's bullshit, Gord?
Take that, bitches.
No, I didn't say anything.
You think it's bullshit?
I just, when we talk about changing the chemistry of blood in ways that don't bypass the liver, I get a little questiony, but I did not bring
all
up,
right.
I didn't say anything, you brought it up.
A little questiony.
Questiony. I like that. Mavs, you want to throw in anything else?
No, we're
all
done.
Right. Are we wrapped up for this morning? I hope you are too. Coming up, a little discussion I had, a conversation with Lyra not so long ago. So stick around for that. It's time for the unnews. Let's see what the most important stories of the day are. Very, very cool to hang out with Gord again this morning and with
you. Love you guys.
You can join us tomorrow at 6 o'clock in the morning. All right. Calls for Parliament to move from Cape Town continue to grow. Though it makes sense on many logistical levels, many MPs are adamantly against it. Turns out a vast majority of them enjoy Parliament being in the Cape, as their wives are all in Gauteng. This makes being a blesser a lot easier, and something that can even be written off to tax as a work expense. Cape Town's first desalination plant is online and already putting water into the system. Politicians visited the plant to see if the operation was working up close, but declined the chance to physically taste the water. They said that that was for the poor. They would stick to bottled water. And finally, Supersport continue to come under fire for not suspending Nick Mallett and Nas Buerta for being obviously racists. Social justice warriors are saying the broadcaster is just proving how out of touch they are with modern audiences as they act with professionalism and composure.
Gave them a fair shake at defending themselves, those demons!
Exactly. All right, we will see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock, bright and early. Have an excellent day on CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.